Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:34 p.m. on Monday, April 8th, 2019. Before we begin, I want to thank Robert Montenegro, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Kopp, Representative Stutes, my Vice Chair, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Klayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 98, Property Crime, Motor Vehicle Theft Tools, sponsored by my office. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. As I'm sponsor of the bill, I'm going to pass the gavel over to my Vice Chair, Representative Ledoux, for the duration of the bill presentation.
So we have Representative Klayman here to present the bill, along with his staff, Lizzie Kubitz. You want to identify yourself, and then you can begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Klayman. I'm the state representative for House District 21 in West Anchorage, and I want to thank you all for hearing this bill this afternoon. Alaska is currently facing a number of public safety challenges, a devastating opioid epidemic, cuts to public safety resources, and a down economy with rising unemployment rates. With Alaska's financial challenges, we work each day and every day to use our public safety resources wisely and to improve public safety. Recently, law enforcement officers in Alaska have reported increased difficulty when arresting and prosecuting serial theft offenders, and after discussions with law enforcement officials about organized theft, retail theft, and motor vehicle theft, I introduced House Bill 98 to strengthen Alaska's laws related to theft and other offenses against property and to improve public safety by giving police officers and prosecutors additional tools for arresting and prosecuting criminals. House Bill 98 effectively targets serial theft offenders and is supported by the National Insurance Crime Bureau, the Alaska Peace Officers Association, and the National Federation of Independent Business. With that, I will turn it over to my staff, Lizzie Kubitz, to explain the details of the bill.
Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lizzie Kubitz, and I'm staff to Representative Klayman. Thank you for hearing House Bill 98 today. So looking at version U of House Bill 98, Section 1 amends AS 1146-130, subsection A, to allow prosecutors to aggregate crimes under theft in the second degree if they occur within 180 days, the amount is more than $750 and less than $25,000, and the property or services are taken from commercial establishments. Section 2 amends AS 1146-285 to update the statute related to fraudulent use of an access device to include an identification document, which clarifies a gap in the statute identified by the Alaska Court of Appeals in Kankanton versus State, in which the Court of Appeals held that a driver's license was not an access device within the meaning of AS 1146-285. I believe that a copy of that case was provided to committee members in your bill packet. Section 3 amends AS 1146 by adding a new section establishing the crime of possession of motor vehicle theft tools as a Class A misdemeanor. This new section is similar to AS 1146-315, which already makes it a crime to possess burglary tools. And finally, Section 4 contains applicability provisions. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
So do we have any questions here for either Representative Klayman or Lizzie? Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So a question for bill sponsor or Lizzie. The Ms. Kubitz, I'm sorry. The current laws I remember for theft, if someone has two or three convictions, it can be charged as a next higher, as a either going from a B to an A, or maybe it's from an A misdemeanor to a C felony. But that doesn't have to do necessarily with commercial establishments. This appears to be going after the retail theft folks. Can you help explain that?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Kopp, I believe you're referencing the aggregation statute that we currently have. It's not repeat offense statutes, but it allows the prosecution to aggregate multiple crimes if they can find a single course of conduct. And what this particular law does, instead of requiring proof of a single course of conduct, it eliminates the single course of conduct requirement, and the only requirement is that it be found to have occurred within a 180-day period, and then they can aggregate multiple charges, but it is limited to retail theft.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just, for the record, can you explain just sort of in layman's terms, what does it mean when we aggregate cases?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, in the context of this bill, if you turn to page 2 of the bill, lines 15 through 18, aggregating would be combining the value of the property or services taken from one or more persons. And that combined amount would be more than $750 and less than $25,000.
And follow up? And so if that language is put into law, is it going to then be just at discretion whether or not that aggregation occurs, or now are we pushing in the direction of requiring it?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, it would be at the prosecutor's discretion, as the same as the current statute about aggregation when you can show a single course of conduct.
Thank you. And follow up? And you mentioned a statute for burglary. Can you just say that one more time? I didn't catch that the first time.
Sure. So Section 3, which is amending AS 1146 by adding that new section, AS 1146-370 is similar to AS 1146-315, which makes it a crime to possess burglary tools.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions from anybody for the committee? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. So I'm curious about Section 3 in particular, and I understand that part of that was incorporated in the last committee. Now, Section 3, what was the reason for including this as a new crime as opposed to, I suppose we could have just made this series of behaviors, you know, aggravators on already existing crimes?
You're referencing the section regarding possession of motor vehicle theft tools?
Correct.
The reason that we added it was primarily at the request of law enforcement officials who believe this would be a useful tool. They have this tool in other states. Tool may not be the right word to use because this is about possession of tools, but in other states, police law enforcement officers find that sometimes you'll catch somebody that they actually haven't stolen the car, but everything they're doing suggests that they're in the process of stealing cars, and this gives them another tool in their prosecution and law enforcement toolbox to be able to prosecute crimes when they think they've caught somebody that is actually engaged in those actions.
Paul? Thank you. So I'm curious to know, are there any exceptions? If anyone has these tools in their possession, is that now against the law, or are there exceptions?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, the law actually requires the person have that motor vehicle theft tool with intent to use or permit the tool in the use of the commission of a vehicle theft. So for example, some folks have asked about this bill. What happens to a locksmith who actually has tools to be able to unlock cars? What happens to others who may have those lawfully? And the answer is that unless you can show that person has the tool with the intent to use it to assist in or commit the commission of vehicle theft, then there would be no crime.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
I'm also, so how how do we normally establish that kind of intent? I'm trying to visualize it. Can you help me?
I'll give you an example of a possession of burglary theft tools, again through the chair. I apologize for the informality. A person calls and says they think there's a prowler in their backyard, and the police arrive and find a person that is wandering around the backyard and looking like trying to find a window to break into, and before the person ever enters the home, they stop the person and they find in their possession are tools that would be commonly used to make the burglary happen, and so that gives them the ability to charge possession of burglary tools even though a burglary hasn't occurred. And you could use those in the same context in an auto theft scenario. You've got somebody wandering around parking lots with one of these keys trying to unlock the cars, and the police arrest them or stop them, and they start investigating, and they discover they have these tools, and they draw the conclusion that they actually have the tools and are trying to commit the crime. So this gives the police the ability to charge that person.
Thank you. Final follow-up? And I'm just wondering, how far back does intent go? Is intent only present and future-looking, or can it go back to a previous crime that was committed sometime in the past? If so, how far back does that go?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I'm not sure I can answer that question. All I can tell you is that to convict someone of a crime, it is typical that there be a mental state in all crimes, and so in this particular instance, in the possession of motor vehicle theft tools, you would actively need to show that at the time they possessed the tools, they had the requisite intent at that time.
So just to be clear, so if I committed a crime previously and I happen to have held on to these tools, but I don't have any current intent to use them because I already finished the crime, is it your intent that be illegal under this language, or are we only focused on active intent at the time that we find that I have the tools?
The chair, Representative Eastman, it's a kind of I would describe that as a fairly odd hypothetical, because generally somebody that has tools related to committing a crime, those tools would be confiscated and forfeited as part of the crime, so that if somebody were arrested and successfully charged with possession of motor vehicle theft tools, I would expect that they wouldn't still have the tools once that conviction was complete.
So why? So if somebody's wandering around a parking lot trying to unlock doors, why aren't you going to be able to get them for attempted burglary without this particular addition? I mean, this seems like somewhat broad. I mean, somebody can be have one of these things in their pocket and just be in a park, in a parking lot.
Madam Chair, certainly a person that is jimmying car locks could, and there's evidence that it's not their car and they don't have permission, that they could be charged with attempted vehicle theft, which would be one level lower than the actual offense had they succeeded. So that would be an option. I can't go through and catalog every place in which law enforcement would find something like this a useful tool. I think in the same sense that possession of burglary tools is probably not the most commonly charged crime in the statute books, I would expect there would be more likely vehicle theft charges than possession of vehicle theft tools. But in the world of trying to improve public safety and really respond to public's concern and police concerns, when police come and say this will actually, there will be cases, and they don't list every single one, but they say these will help us do our work, that seems like a pretty easy step to do that, particularly one that's a tool that's available to police and prosecutors in other states.
And incidentally, Representative Shaw and Representative Wong have joined us. Further questions for the bill sponsor or his aide?
Comment when there's time.
So that brings us to public testimonies. So I'm going to bang us out for a second, and Representative Klayman will resume the gavel.
Back on record, Representative Ledoux, thank you very much for sharing, and that brings us to public testimony. And I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony on House Bill 98. Is there anyone here in the room that would like to testify in the public hearing on House Bill 98? I also see no one is registered online. I would note that there's a couple of detectives with the Anchorage Police that testified, or one that testified in State Affairs, and when we hear this bill again, we may be able to hear from them. But they, I know we talked to one of them, and they had to get their child to the doctor and weren't going to call in and join us today. But we may be able to get some Anchorage Police detectives to add some input as well. I don't see anyone in the room that wishes to testify. I see no one online, so I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 98. Representative Eastman, you had a comment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to envision how this is going to be used, and my first thought is that this new crime sort of to take the place of the crime of theft, when you can't charge someone with theft because they haven't completed the theft yet. And I think I can understand, you know, why law enforcement might like the ability to charge someone who hasn't yet completed that particular crime. I think if we're looking at someone who has already completed the crime and they have these tools in their possession from a previous crime, then I think it would make the most sense to deal with that previous crime, and when you're prosecuted for violating that, that, you know, having tools, you know, being a professional might be an aggravator of some kind. But I am very reticent to look forward into the future for a crime that hasn't taken place yet, not knowing whether someone is actually going to make the decision to commit that crime, and now charging them for a new crime based on the crime that they haven't committed yet.
Representative Kopp.
Chairman, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I can see from experience this is going to be a very useful tool for public safety. A couple of things, just observations on theft. Second, how it is now, being a C felony theft, to put the law out as it is now for repeat offenders who have twice been convicted of stealing at a misdemeanor level, $250 or more, those two convictions have to have occurred within 5 years to get a, for the new act of theft to be a C felony or theft second degree. What this bill is doing that I really like is it targets the crime spree. The person who is going into retail after retail, or is going literally from Cabela's to Bass Pro Shop to Target to Sportsman's Warehouse, and maybe doing $50 here, $60 here, always staying well low. But this makes it clear that if the sum total of that within 6 months is at the felony level, you're charged with the felony, because this is addressing the reality of how serial thieves work. Is smaller, and you have to prove it. Prosecution still has to prove that these retail thefts all occurred within a time bar, or to be a felony. So it's not taking away due process, but you are addressing the people who are causing the most damage to our businesses. When you walk into, you know, the any retail store, and they give you their concerns about misdemeanor thefts and maybe not being taken seriously, this helps quickly get them into felony territory, which is where they ought to be. So I think it's a very important tool. And for law enforcement, you don't have to go back 5 years to see have they been convicted two or more times of this misdemeanor theft before we can charge it as a felony. It's more, it brings you into the active role of what's happening now in this person's life. And yes, we have picked them up 5-6 times, sometimes 8-10 times in a matter of months. And I think it also helps the system intervene. Often there are substance abuse issues, and the quicker we can intervene, the more we can stop violence, theft, and other substance abuse issues. So I think it's exactly on track with where public safety needs to go to respond to these things. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Shaw, you're grabbing your microphone like you have something to say.
I do appreciate that. And following up on my colleague's
please go ahead.
Wisdom here in law enforcement, that intervention, I think, is really the direction we're trying to go more than any other direction, because we have committed ourselves to arresting and prosecuting and putting people in jail. But if we can use this bill to help us in the process of intervention, it's huge. It's a big difference in, as we say, nipping the problem early, nipping the bud before it grows, and I think it's very beneficial. So thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Representative Kopp, I'll give you another run.
I failed to mention one point, to just observation. The possession of the tools themselves is not a crime. You do have to show intent to use, and that's kind of how it is with burglary tools, too. Prosecution still has to show beyond a reasonable doubt that the reason why you had these was you were intending to commit a crime. That's a fairly high bar. There has to be a lot of evidence to show that's why they had it. So I appreciate that we're keeping that same language in the law.
Thank you. Representative Shaw.
And in a follow-up to my colleague, this is a very good tool to use.
Thank you, Representative Shaw. Any other comments? I would just note that the issue of possession, the notion that people are going to get charged with possession of auto theft tools, or for that matter, burglary theft tools, when there's not evidence that they're actively engaged in auto thefts and burglary thefts, seems to me very extremely unlikely. The other question about why not just add this as an aggravating factor to the felony statute regarding crimes. And while one could do that, the difficulty is that oftentimes if the conduct that is being charged in the felony is also part of the conduct that relates to the aggravator, you can't find the aggravator because it's already subsumed within the particular conduct. And so trying to come up with a way to craft an aggravator based just on possession of the burglary tools, or for that matter, the auto theft tools, would be an aggravator that would get seldom, if ever, used. And whereas this is actually a crime that, although they could charge just the possession of the tools, they could actually charge somebody that's in a car driving. They could charge them both with the auto theft and the possession of the auto theft tools. So, Representative Ledoux.
So I'm trying to figure out how this might work in real life. I mean, I kind of understand. I mean, and we're talking about the possession of motor vehicle theft tools. I mean, I kind of understand it when you're out in the parking lot or something like that. But
so, Representative Ledoux, go ahead, finish your question.
Okay.
No, finish your question.
So suppose you are suspected of the crime of auto theft, and so the police obtain a search warrant to search your residence, and they find the tools. So when finding the tools in conjunction with the suspicion that you have committed auto theft, would that be enough to charge you with the possession of motor vehicle theft tools?
I'll do my best to answer it, but then I note, since we've been talking, that Michelle Logan, Deputy Detective from the Anchorage Police Department, has joined us, who may, well, actually, what I'm going to do rather than answer it. Detective Logan, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear.
And did you hear Representative Ledoux's question?
Yes.
And if you can answer the question, if you would identify yourself for the record, who you're affiliated with, and then you can answer Representative Ledoux's question.
My name is Michelle Logan. I'm a detective with the Anchorage Police Department. Been with the Anchorage Police Department for 24 years, 17 of those in property crimes, financial and property crimes.
Go ahead and answer her question.
If you could repeat the question, I was listening to the discussion. The specific is, if you do a search warrant on a home and there's motor vehicle tools in there, is that enough to charge? Is that what the question was?
Yes. If you think that somebody might have been engaging in, you get the search warrant because you think that somebody has been engaging in automobile theft. And so then you get the search warrant and you find the tools. Is that going to be enough to charge you with possession of motor vehicle theft tools with the intent to use them in the commission of vehicle theft?
I believe it would, but you know, even before you got in the house, you would have to have sufficient probable cause that the person was already stealing vehicles. So then to get into the house, that's almost, you've already established with a court that there's probable cause that they are doing this activity. So then when you get in the house and you find the tools, that strengthens that case for the stealing of the vehicle. Plus, of course, now you do have the possession of the motor vehicle theft tools. And of course, when we talk about motor vehicle theft tools, what we're talking about, a lot of it is shaved keys, what we call bump keys. So we've arrested people in their pockets, in their purses, on the floorboard of the cars, the stolen cars that they're in, a plethora of keys. Maybe, I don't know, I've seen up to 20 keys on a key ring, and they're different sizes of keys, you know, whether it be a Ford or a Chevy, and it's shaved down so that they can stick it in and turned almost any vehicle of that make and model that key would go to. So that's the type of thing we're talking about. We're not, you know, we could also talk about screwdrivers, things that they would use to pop the ignition, the steering column so they could get to the ignition, those types of things. But especially if you arrest somebody with 20 bump keys in their pocket, they're probably stealing vehicles, but maybe you don't have them on a stolen vehicle but we're trying to really, you know, what we would like to see is that this activity, which is pervasive, as you probably have heard in the news and whatnot, the vehicle theft problem, especially that we have here in Anchorage, these types of things lend themselves directly. There's no other reason to have 20 bump keys in your pocket or even 3 bump keys in your pocket. So those are the types of things we're talking about, jiggler keys, bump keys, old or worn keys, shaved keys, those types of things.
Representative Ledoux,
and if people know that those possession of those items are a misdemeanor crime, I mean, you know, that would be something that...
So you're saying that even without the proving of intent to steal a car, that just the possession of these would be a crime? Is that your understanding of the way this would work? Because it kind of concerns me when you say that there's no legitimate reason why somebody might have those.
We already have crimes on the book for possession of burglary tools, and we have crimes on the book, misdemeanor crimes, for possession of a machine to make counterfeit credit cards. We already have those on the books here in Alaska, so now we're just adding a different crime to have the tools to commit those crimes. So we're not making a huge leap, I don't think, in our thinking, because we already have possession of burglary tools, possession of credit card, I forget the exact name I was slipping through here trying to find that
access devices.
So can I ask a follow-up?
Go ahead, Representative. I would just note that I believe that the description the detective is giving of having 20 shaved keys on a keychain and going around town, they're not going to see those unless they've had some reason to contact the person and think they're doing something suspicious. But none of that removes the need to find intent. I think part of the argument is that if you have that many keys, the possession of that many keys may be enough in and of itself to convince a jury that there is that intent, but they still that doesn't remove the need to prove that.
Prima facie evidence.
So
you can continue, Representative Liddell.
So you're saying that the possession of the tools itself is an indication of intent. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, legislatively, you would make it a misdemeanor to possess those types of tools because that's what those particular tools are for. And people who possess those types of tools are probably involved in some type of stealing vehicles or vehicle theft rings.
How do you distinguish those folks from locksmiths and people that legitimately have tools that are designed to open up cars or open up houses or otherwise open locks?
So a locksmith would have a license. Would be a locksmith. I mean, not anybody can just go around and say, I'm a locksmith and I have a bunch of tools. You pretty much, to be a legitimate locksmith, you would have a license.
Representative Wohl, question for
Detective
Logan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. I guess initially I felt pretty clear about what the law said. It said you must show intent, and now we have a detective saying, well, anyone who has those tools must be a criminal, so better write them up. And maybe that wasn't her intent, but that's how it's coming across, and I'm getting nods from other people in committee. Now, what if you're pulled over for speeding and they see a shaved key on your key ring? Is that intent of stealing a car, even if you're driving your own legally owned car? Wow, you have a shaved key. You must be some kind of bad person. Maybe they have an old car, a 1963, Chrysler Newport that's been used so long that the key is worn down. Or it'll only start with a weird key. I've had cars, legally owned, that I start with screwdrivers. I'm just saying. So it's the absolute truth, and I believe it's legal. I hope it still is. But, I just don't want to go down this road of presumed guilt because they have a weird key on them. And you get my point.
Detective Logan, can you answer Representative Wohl's question?
I don't think that just because someone has a bunch of keys, we're going to charge them with the crime unless there's other circumstances surrounding. We pull them in, they've been brought to the station, sleeping in a stolen car. They have the keys on them. That's an additional crime that can be charged. There's someone prowling in the area. We get prowlers in the neighborhoods, patrol responds, they find a person that that meets the description, and they have shaved keys in their pocket. You know, they could be a citizen walking down the street at 2 in the morning, or they could be a person who's potentially prowling, and now they have shaved keys in their pocket. We can charge them with the misdemeanor. It all has to have probable cause. We don't just say, oh, you've got a shaved key, and we're going to arrest you for misdemeanor possession of motor vehicle tools. We have to establish a probable cause around the circumstances. We interview the subject, whatever. That's when you would be able to charge the crime, not just because they're holding it in their hand.
Representative, do I have you in the queue? Representative Eastman.
I can go after her.
Well, you're in the queue now. Go for it.
All right. There was a comment made, and there was something you said, Mr. Chairman, that stuck out to me, and it was you mentioned that, you know, these things aren't going to come into play until someone's already, been contacted by law enforcement for committing some type of crime or offense of some kind or other. And I just wanted to point out how slippery of a slope this is because, you know, my first training in law enforcement was in California, and it started off, they gave you the vehicle code for California. It was about, 700, 800 pages long. And the instruction that I was given at that time was, if you're a trained law enforcement police officer, and you do, traffic offenses with any degree of regularity, and you come across someone, while you're driving on the highway, and you can't find at least one reason to pull them over and make that contact, you are not doing your job well, and you are not fully trained as law enforcement. And I'm not saying that you should pull everyone over, but...
Representative, let's get to a question, because you're at a minute already.
So my question is going to be... I heard earlier about screwdrivers, and I was just wondering, is a, a long-handled screwdriver, in your opinion, Detective, is that potentially a motor vehicle theft tool?
It is, especially when it's laying on the floorboard of a vehicle that has the steering column punched. If that's what they're using. Or sometimes we get the vehicles with the screwdrivers in the ignition. So at that point, it does become a motor theft motor vehicle theft tool.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
I've lost my train of thought.
I've got a question. I'll jump in.
I'll put you in the queue, but Representative Kopp is next. Everybody's all interested now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Detective Logan, for being with the committee today. The possession of burglary tools now, the word in the statute to show why something is being used to commit or may be used to commit is the mental state is intentionally a person commits the crime of possession of burglary tools if the person possesses a burglary tool with intent to use or permit use of the tool commission of a burglary. The possession of motor vehicle theft tool statute is written identically, showing that intentionally is part of the element of the crime that you have to prove. I was hoping maybe you could just talk to the committee a little bit about the difference between having a reckless disregard that something may or may not happen, acting knowingly that something may happen, and then intentionally when it's your conscious objective to cause a certain result, so that the committee could get a better sense that law enforcement isn't willy-nilly just charging people. Thank you.
Well, and just for the record, that section is the possession of burglary tools is section 1146.315, with intent to use or permit use of the tool in the commission of a burglary in any degree or other crimes of theft. And once again, if we catch someone in the commission of a burglary, they're halfway through a window, or a homeowner calls and they're outside, trying to pry open a window, and we do happen to catch them, or there's someone in the neighborhood, they, by the time the police get there, they're a couple blocks away, but they're stopped, and then you see that they have the tools, either whether you're talking about a burglary or maybe a stolen vehicle. Those are all probable cause that that's the person who was intending to try to break in the house, and they have the tools. They have a pry bar on them or some other tool that you can use. And, of course, the tools in this section, nitroglycerin, dynamite, torches, electric arc, any of a number of things that you could use. So that's a pretty broad, definition of what types of things could be burglary tools. And so, back to the motor vehicle tools, we're talking about keys and things that you could use to start a vehicle, usually in the ignition. And so the activity surrounding how that person is contacted, or you bring someone in for a burglary because they've been a suspect in a burglary, either their fingerprint or DNA has been found and their warrants obtained, they're brought in for questioning, and at the time they're actually contacted by police and brought to the station, you find in their pocket, in the case of a motor vehicle, some bump keys, or in the case of a burglary, they have a little miniature pry bar in their up their sleeve. I mean, any of a number of a million scenarios could occur of how someone could connected to that activity and then also have said tools on their person or in their vehicle or in their campsite, you know, whatever, in their home, whatever, you know, the case may be. And it's another additional charge. You know, if you can't necessarily pin them on the burglary, but you can, you know, because they didn't get in the house, they didn't go through with the burglary, but they're contacted down the street and you find a pry bar on their person or something like that, it's something that we can charge them. And the probable cause that that intent is there is, I think, if you were in that situation at that moment, you would see that it was there's a connection. And we're not just willy-nilly stopping people on the street and saying, oh, you have a pry bar. I mean, we might, but would we be able to charge them with that that statute? It just depends on all the situation around surrounding it. So no, we're not willy-nilly just going to go out and arrest people because they have a key on their pocket or something like that. There has to be other reasons why so we're actually charging them.
We're getting all kinds of interest here on the committee. I think Representative Kopp has a follow-up to his last question. Go ahead, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Detective Logan, if you encounter someone who possesses any one of those explosives, cutting torches, burglary tools, motor vehicle theft tools, the possession alone is not a criminal offense unless you can show intent to use to commit the crime. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Shaw is next in the queue.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's one of the issues that has come up, and it seems like everybody's sort of forgetting the fact that probable cause and intent attached to these tools is what makes the difference, not just having the tools. And everybody's giving these hypothetical questions about what if and what if, but without probable cause, without intent, as my colleague had highlighted, and as Detective Logan has highlighted a number of times, it's a non-issue.
That wasn't a question, but we will.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're mostly in question. No, she doesn't have to answer the question since you didn't have a question. Representative Wool, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand probable cause. I understand all that. I really do. And that was the intent of the piece of legislation in front of us, and I was on board with that. However, I've been hearing some testimony that gives me pause. Screwdrivers is not listed on this page at all. Jiggle keys and all these other things that I would never. I don't own, but I own a lot of screwdrivers. And like I said before, I've owned cars that I start with screwdrivers. So my question for the detective is, what if someone is breaking into a house and they get arrested, but then they also have a jiggler key on them? They're not stealing a car, but would that be another charge you could give, even though they're not in the act of stealing a car or even in suspicion of stealing a car? Or if someone gets pulled over in a DUI and they have a Slim Jim in their car, could you then say, well, you committed this crime, now we're going to attach this other crime to it, even though, and it seems to be some of the stuff you're saying implies that could happen, and I think that's what's given us pause.
Well, if that's the way I made it sound, it's not what I meant. We don't just arrest people because they have something in their pocket or in their car. There has to be a scenario involved where the person is a suspect or suspicious for some reason.
Mr. Chair, let me interrupt for a second.
I'm going to, Representative Will has a follow-up. I'll let him interrupt.
Detective Logan, I'm not saying you're going to pull someone over just because they have it. You're going to stop someone for another cause, a DUI, a breaking and entering, or something. But in the course of that action, you see a tool that could be used for automotive theft. Could that be then a charge to that person? In other words, if they're DUI or...
Let's limit it to the DUI question because I think the breaking and entering starts sounding like possession of burglary tools, which might...
No, I mean a jiggle key if someone's breaking and entering.
Right.
Separate crimes.
Right.
Okay, so we stop someone for a DUI and they have a bump key in their pocket. The crime at hand is the driving while intoxicated. It's their own car, it's registered to them, or it's a vehicle that someone they know vouches for, that's my vehicle. If not, has anything to do with a stolen vehicle, the chances that that is, we're just going to say, oh, you have a bump key, we're charging you for DUI, and we're going to charge you for this bump key too. I don't think that is what any officer would do. We would start now saying, oh, you have a bump key. What is this key? Why do you have this? And say the person confesses that, well, you know, I stole a car yesterday. Well, then we have a case. But until you get to such a point in the investigative process, no, we're not, you know, you stop someone in the car, there's a screwdriver on the floor. No, we let those things go every day. Even if we had this law on the books, those things would go by every day. We let people go back when marijuana was more of a criminal crime. We let people go every day for having pipes. We could arrest them for paraphernalia, but we let them go. We took it from them and said, well, you don't need this. Go on your way. I think most officers are very reasonable. They know they have to have that probable cause. I don't think this is a muddied statute. We already are blessing the possession of burglary tools and forgery instruments. It's the same spirit of the law for that particular proposed statute.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
Well, I actually think it's barely muddied, and I'm looking at the possession of burglary tools, which thank you very much for pointing that out, and I'm noticing, and I mean, maybe we should look into this, I mean, some extremely legal things are here in these burglary tools, like dynamite. I mean, people can have dynamite because they want to blow up something which it's perfectly okay to blow up. And it kind of seems through your testimony that maybe you're saying, well, you know, we could arrest somebody for having these things in their possessions, but basically we're probably not going to do that if they seem like, you know, a decent guy and everything. And I guess that kind of concerns me just a little bit, that there doesn't seem to be any, like, hard and fast rule about it. So
Representative, you're about to okay, make. Can I'll you get a question here for
all
the
right.
detective?
So you think that there is some burglar prowling around property, and then you spot some guy who's maybe a block from that property, and he's got one of these device, car theft, I should say, because that's what we're talking about. You think that there's somebody who's tried to steal a car maybe a block away, and you spot somebody, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're on the street, but a block away.
Representative, I'll finish the question.
Thank
they've
you.
Got car theft. They've got 20 keys that look like car theft keys. Can you charge that person? That's what Representative Ledoux, I think,
Thank
wants
you.
To know.
Thank you.
You could charge that person if you can develop probable cause, and you would probably be interviewing that person, asking them what they're doing out there, why they have these keys. Criminal history can go towards probable cause. If they have a vehicle theft or vehicle tampering in their criminal history, that helps bolster probable cause. So you have to have probable cause. That is the protection for the citizens.
Okay,
Representative Ledoux, as you know, that probable cause is in both our state and federal constitutions.
Thank you. So somebody's a block away. You can just stop this person for questioning, and maybe they don't want to answer. Maybe they figure they're minding their own business and they're a block away. Do you get to, under those circumstances, do you get to search them? Do you get to bring them in if they don't want to answer?
So, Representative Ledoux, I'm happy to let the detective answer, but I think there's well-established differences between a police officer's ability to ask a person questions and then where that goes, their ability to try to frisk them or, for that matter, take them into custody. But, Detective, you can answer. I know that she's actually raised all kinds of issues, but go ahead, Detective.
So, again, we have a lot of constitutional law and case law and policies and procedures for when we can stop someone and ask them a question. We can always stop and ask a question. If they don't want to answer their question, they can continue walking. In the case that we get a phone call that there's a vehicle prowler or somebody was at my back door trying to open the door, police respond to the area. Anybody moving, it's in the middle of the night, anybody moving in that area, or if they have a description of the person meeting that description, at that point we will stop them and ask them questions. At what point can we, if we have that ability to stop them because of the situation, at that point we have the ability to protect ourselves by patting them down for weapons to make sure that while we're talking to them they don't pull a knife or a gun. So it's an investigative process that we have to go through, you know, and then the answers they give you. What are you doing out here? Where do you live? You know, well, I don't live anywhere. So you're in this neighborhood walking around at 2 in the morning. It just goes on and on from there. But like I said, constitutional law, policy procedures are well established for what we can do, and it's not an abusive thing that the police do on a regular basis to get to the probable cause.
Representative Eastman. Representative Shaw, I see you're in the queue. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. I wanted to probe two parts of the law that we have not yet gotten into, also on Section 3. And you know, I think so far we've been talking about, you know, when it's your intent to, you know, commit the crime using these tools. How broadly is commission of a crime interpreted? Does you know, in the commission of a vehicle theft, does that start, you know, when I leave my house to go steal a car, or does that start when I break the window? How is that going to be interpreted?
To the extent you can answer how the courts would interpret this, you can go ahead, Ms. Logan.
Well, I don't want to claim to know the case law for every single situation that you're bringing up, but at what point is it a vehicle, an intent to steal a vehicle? It would be some overt act, breaking a window, you know, in the car. Most of the people that we bring to the police station for vehicle theft are in a car, whether they're sleeping, the car's parked, whether they're driving, they're already in the car. Just looking at a car, thinking to themselves, boy, I'd like to steal that car, that's not enough for us to do anything. And for them to leave their house and we're going to go steal some cars tonight, that's not enough. Even if someone said, hey, my friend left the house and he's going to go steal cars, there's nothing we can do until they actually steal the car, whether that be breaking a window, getting into the vehicle because it's unlocked, you know, that sort of thing. So it's the actual overt action of it, I would say. And I don't know if that's a court, you know, legal terminology or what. I'm just the detective that looks for probable cause in my investigations. And what's probable cause? It's what a reasonable person would say, yeah, they're probably stealing that car.
Follow up.
Follow up, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate the answer there, and I mean, I guess that kind of goes back to, if you're already dealing with, you know, the crime of vehicle theft, and you're actually catching them in the act of the vehicle theft, then, you know, that's the crime you're charging them with, and I don't know that you need a new crime because you already have that crime to deal with. But I think some of the questions raised thus far have been someone who isn't caught in the car. And that's why we have this new crime that we're, you know, considering creating, to catch that kind of person that isn't in the car, but, you know, somehow in the commission of vehicle theft. And, you know, I want to hit also on, you know, whether it's you using the tool. So my question, whether we have somebody from legal or the detective, is if you have a tool in your house and you're the parent and your child, you know, has brought that into the house and you know that they're up to, you know, illegal things, at what point does it become, you know, can we charge you with this crime of permitting use of the tool for committing theft? How much knowledge?
All right, Representative Eastman, I think you've managed to get the question out. Go ahead, Ms. Logan. You can answer Representative Eastman's question.
Again, with this law, it says intent. So simple possession without intent, we would not charge it. So it just depends on the totality of the circumstances, whether we think that we have something that we're able to charge. And every day we find people with illegal things that we do not charge them for a crime, every single day. But this is just another tool for, this is just another tool that for deterrence, this is what we're looking for, deterrence of this epidemic of vehicle theft that we have going on in our state, which is primarily in Anchorage because of the population base here, but this is an additional tool. It could be somebody in the car. Oftentimes, only one person in the vehicle will be charged with the vehicle theft, but there's someone with them, and they're the ones with the pocket full of shade keys. So they're not driving the vehicle. The investigation, there's no way to get it out of them that they, you know, that they don't admit to stealing the vehicle, but yet they have the keys in their pocket. So, like I said, every situation is different, and it takes the interview process and the investigation process. A female in the vehicle, but her purse is on the seat. We go back and get a search warrant. She says she didn't steal the vehicle. We go back and get a search warrant on the vehicle, get her purse out, and she's got bump keys in the purse. That actually happened to me. So, you know, we're able to charge her with the vehicle theft, but, you know, to also charge a misdemeanor. A vehicle theft is a felony. This would be a misdemeanor. We have to go to grand jury within 10 days if they don't waive time on a felony, whereas we also charge them with the tools, then we're not under the gun to get to a grand jury in our crowded judicial system right now. So it's another tool. It's another thing for us to work with, and people who have these types of tools, probable cause, if we can show it, is that they're up to no good with it as far as the vehicles, stealing vehicles, which is a problem right now.
Detective Logan, I think you've answered the question adequately. Representative Eastman, everyone has had multiple shots with questions for this officer. There's a couple of other issues on this bill that I want to ask the officer about. Representative Shaw has been in the queue. I'm going to let Representative Shaw ask one question, maybe one follow-up, and then I'll get the other issues out. And then, because I suspect they're going to raise additional issues, and I do want to get us out of here on schedule. Representative Shaw, go ahead.
Through the chair. Detective Logan, I know you've answered most of the hypotheticals in the same fashion, and I'm not going to give you another hypothetical because I do know the answer. And the questions I would like to ask you, and you can just say agree to or not, is if we have reasonable cause, if we follow constitutional provisions, if there is intent and an ounce of common sense from the police officer, would you agree that a person can be stopped?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
All right. So, Detective Logan, I want to turn your attention in connection with the proposed language for possession of motor vehicle theft tools, and in subsection B2, it's on page 3 that describes different types of motor vehicle theft tools. My understanding is that we did not include any language about electronic keys or electronic boxes that can sometimes pick up the signals from the key fobs that would allow somebody that is in the vicinity to pick up the key fob signals and then use their little electronic key gizmo. I don't know what the right description for it is, but is it your view that it would be beneficial to add to Section 3 about the definition of motor vehicle theft tools, add language about an electronic unlock device to be included within the definition of a motor vehicle theft tool.
Yes, and we have seen those here in Anchorage. People with the Ring cameras on their houses have seen people pull up to the curb, get out with a box in their hand. Next thing you know, their car is on, the lights flicker on the car, they jump in, and off they go, and the other vehicle follows behind them. So we have had that here in Anchorage, so that would be something beneficial if you, once again, encountered somebody with that type of a device on their person and you develop all the probable cause that you need to maybe, that should be, if you're going to include these other items, that should be included, yes.
All right. First, anybody, this, so I'm going to limit questions now to adding to this bill through the amendment process or possibly a committee substitute a definition of what I'll call an electronic unlock device. Questions related to that, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just draw your attention to line 17, and my question would be, when it talks about, you know, a similar device adapted or designed for use in committing vehicle theft, I'm not sure that an amendment's needed because that could be a device that's designed in committing vehicle theft. I mean, isn't that logical?
That's the question, and that's what we'll be looking at.
So,
Representative, I mean,
yes.
I keep calling you Representative Logan. I apologize, Detective Logan. I don't think that's more a question of statutory interpretation. I don't think that requires a response from you. I would note the question that Representative Eastman asked actually goes to the use of the word similar device. If you took out the word similar, that might get to where Representative Eastman's talking about. But if you look at the other descriptions, there probably is an argument that similar device narrows what that device could be. But that's the kind of thing we'll be taking up, I think, as we look at this bill in the future. And probably any other questions about the electronic unlock device? Representative, we'll go
ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that's more for Detective Logan, but go ahead.
Well, I guess with all these devices, including the electronic device, if you catch someone in the act of stealing the car, is it just another charge? I mean, you've already got them on vehicle theft. Now, anyone who steals a car probably has a tool to do so, I'm guessing, most of the people. So including electronic device, which I don't know if they look like key fobs or I don't even know what they look like. They may look like just a regular old, you know, clicker that you have for your car. But basically anyone who gets the felony charge of auto theft, caught doing auto theft, would also get a misdemeanor charge, assuming they used a tool to steal the car. Which I guess is a question for the bill sponsor. So you're basically adding it. So if you catch someone stealing a car, now they're going to get another charge pretty much automatically unless they stole the car with the proper keys of the car.
And to some extent, I don't know the answer. That's actually an interesting question. I will ask Detective Logan. So today in the burglary theft tools statute that exists with burglary, is it common if somebody's charged with burglary and they also are discovered to have burglary theft tools in their possession at the time they're arrested for the burglary? Is it common, in your knowledge, for the prosecution to charge both crimes, or usually do they just charge the burglary, or what's your experience on that?
Oftentimes it's just the burglary. However, if they're apprehended and they have a tool bag full of things that could be defined as burglary tools, they would probably add that charge. And I would say the same thing would go for vehicles. And the other thing I don't see on this list is screwdriver, which could be adapted. And not that everybody that has a screwdriver is going to be arrested, or even everybody that's starting their truck with a screwdriver, it's their own truck. But, you know, once again, the totality of circumstances, it would. And also, I have already mentioned the difference between a felony and a misdemeanor. When we do charge a felony, we're under the gun with the DA's office and their backup to the backed up caseload that they have to get to a grand jury in 10 days, not even 10 working days, 10 days. A misdemeanor can slow down that process for someone who's truly maybe a prolific vehicle thief. So charging a misdemeanor along with a felony can be beneficial. Especially when you have somebody that the courts don't feel is someone who could be bail, that would just get bail automatically because they do have a criminal history of vehicle theft.
And I would note with regard to screwdrivers, the screwdriver is not in the current proposal, and that's obviously a topic upon which there's different views on the committee, and we you will probably, as we go forward, have an opportunity to discuss it more. The second area that I wanted Detective Logan to comment on is in section one of the bill that relates to, I'm sorry, section two of the bill relating theft of an access, fraudulent use of an access device or identification document. My understanding, Detective Logan, is that you've had some comments that some of the changes that went on over the years since this statute was first enacted has caused you to think that we should look at lowering the property value on this so that it doesn't track the same values for theft, so that rather than a $750 or more, but less than $25,000, I believe it's your suggestion and the department's suggestion that for fraudulent use of an access device or identification document that there should be a lower amount to classify as a felony. Can you take us through your analysis on why you suggest a lower amount to make this felony conduct, and what is the lower amount you would suggest?
Okay, so I actually testified on this, on House Bill 131 in 2005, and it was a bill to raise on fraudulent use of an access device, a credit card, or it. Before 2005, the levels followed the theft statutes, which at that time a felony was $500, and it went from there. So back in 2005, when identity theft was starting to rear its head as a pretty prolific problem, House Bill 131 was passed and signed by Governor Murkowski at that time to lower the felony level of fraudulent use of an access device to $50. And it was passed into law. And then when SB 91 was passed, somebody went through all the statutes and again made them equivalent to the theft levels, which you would not now hit a felony level on fraudulent use of an access device until $750. Well, when someone steals your wallet and starts using your credit cards, they're not going to run to the store and spend $750. They may not even aggregate in two or three stores $750. But yet, your credit card was stolen, and as a victim, you're probably feeling like this should be a felony offense, you know, because they stole my credit card, which can be a form of identity theft, and everything in my wallet. So at that time, we lowered it. The felony level was if you stole somebody's credit card access device and you completed a transaction for $50, then you were in C felony level, as opposed to $750, which today, the way it's written, you would have to steal someone's credit card and use it for $750. Most people steal a credit card if that's what they're into. You know, they first thing they do, as we see a lot of, is the first place they go is Holiday or to one of the gas stations, because you're out at an island at a pump and you're going to fill up your vehicle. It's a good way to test the credit card to see if it's going to work. Maybe $75 for gas these days, depending on the price of fuel. And that's your first charge, and then you might use it some more. But then at some point, the victim is going to turn off the credit card. You may never make it to $750, but that's what you would need to have a felony. And so we think that stealing a credit card should be a felony if you steal someone's credit card and use it for over the amount of $50. Right now, if you steal a check, forgery of a check has always been a felony, a C felony. If you write a check for $10, you steal someone's check and forge it for $10, that's a C felony. But yet if you steal someone's credit card and use it, you have to use it for $750 worth before you're considered to have a felony. So I think just to bring it back in line with what the crime is and the practicality of you've stolen someone's credit card and you're wreaking havoc on their credit reports and what they have to do to bring their financial situation back under control, but yet it's just a misdemeanor unless they charge $750, which is not something we would
All right.
Hardly ever see.
So, Detective Logan, that does answer the query. I see Adam. Representative Wool has a question on this topic. Representative Wool, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who this is directed to, but I guess you're talking about misdemeanors and felonies, and if a $10 check is a felony, maybe that's another question altogether. I know we're not addressing that right now, but, you know, at what point should something be a felony, which has all the other implications of having a felony on your record? With, say, and the detective earlier said if a credit card is stolen off and they go to a gas station, fill up their tank, and quite often these cards can get shut off pretty quick. So if it's less than $750, how much damage is done to their credit, their actual credit report, if they get a few tanks of gas before someone shuts off the card. So, maybe the question is, when should it be a felony? Is a valid question, and a forged check for $10 maybe shouldn't be a felony. I know it is, but I guess the implications of felony can be significant.
Detective Logan, any comments on Representative Wool's question?
I think for the victim, it's more than whether a $50 charge would ruin your credit so much as any theft of your credit card, and the fact that you have to now jump through hoops to contact your bank, get credit cards reissued. You're just getting ready to go to Mexico, and suddenly you don't have a credit card. Just the things that the victims go through, to say that it's not, why should someone be able to steal credit cards and not, and just be charged with a misdemeanor slap on the wrist? I mean, I think it lends itself to identity theft, and it's a very real crime, and anybody that has gone through that knows the inconvenience, the frustration. Oftentimes it's more than one credit card. But so anyway,
Detective Logan, I think you've answered the question successfully. I think it's a different perspective than Representative Wool is commenting on. Other questions with regard to the provisions about fraudulent use of an access device or identification document? Representative Eastman, I didn't think you'd...
I just was curious, Mr. Chairman. I think that and some of these other things would be well handled by someone from the Department of Law. Is there anyone from the Department of Law we can ask questions of?
There's none here today. Yeah, we actually did contact Casey Schroeder from the Department of Law, and she was unable to attend, but we will, when this bill is back, or we will be sure to get her to comment. And, of course, you're always welcome to write.
And I'm filling in at the last second.
Hold on. You're always welcome to write them separately and provide a copy of their response to the committee. Representative Ledoux.
Am I missing something here? But it doesn't look like we've changed anything from 750. We have all this talk about access devices and credit cards for less than 750, but has that been changed?
No, that's not changed. This is existing law. The change in Section 2, Representative Ledoux, is adding identification document to the definition to be added along with access device, and that's in specific response to the Court of Appeals decision in Canton versus State.
Okay, so all of this discussion as to whether or not you should be charged with a crime.
This discussion about changing that is that because this statute is in front of us, the detectives contacted my office and suggested that we look at in terms of what constitutes a felony for this particular crime, that since we're addressing this crime, we should consider lowering the threshold for felony to a lower amount than $750, and their recommendation is $50.
But you haven't put that in the bill.
No, but I know it's a topic, and I didn't want anybody to be surprised if it comes up again. Okay. I don't see any other questions.
I do, actually.
Representative Eastman, don't wait too long.
Thank you. I just wondered if we could kind of talk about what are all the identification documents we're trying to capture here.
Representative Eastman, I would recommend that you read the Cancandon decision that talks about the distinction between the access device and the identification document, and after you've read that opinion, we can have further discussion. But it's a very, very detailed analysis in the Cancandon decision. I would recommend it to you, and I wouldn't suggest anyone try to summarize that at this point. All right. I see no other questions or comments.
I do have a comment when we get to comments.
I think that's where we've been for the last hour, Representative Eastman. I'm going to give you 1 minute to make a comment, recognizing your attention to time as announced on the floor.
Are we just talking about the whole bill, Mr. Chairman?
You have 1 minute to say anything you want, and then you're done, and you've used 10 seconds of it already.
Oh, that's very helpful. You know, it seemed to me that we could solve a lot of these issues by simply increasing the penalties for things like vehicle theft rather than coming up with a new crime to try and catch people who have or haven't committed the crime of vehicle theft before. I'm just picturing my colleague, Representative Wool, with his screwdriver, which I now know he uses, driving around, you know, the block looking for a parking spot and now being pulled over for scoping out vehicles. And now we know that he was doing that because he has a screwdriver that he's been using, and that's very different than I think the intent of the law from what I'm hearing.
Thank you very much, Representative Eastman. With that, we will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is on Wednesday, April 10 at 1 p.m. Of course, depending on what's happening on the floor, that scheduled time may well get extended. But with that, we will stand adjourned. It is now 2:51 p.m.